This episode is brought to you by 624 Coffee Company. If you dream about coffee beans the way I do, you're probably a little weird, but you might enjoy good coffee. So order from 624 Coffee Company today. All right, then. Welcome in to another rare episode of The Opening Drive. And this is round two with Vic. We tried this like a good month ago, but because I'm getting older, my technical skills are in decline. And I literally forgot what program to use to record, you know, a podcast and interview somebody. I don't know how, I don't know why, but I was paying for StreamYard at the time. Now I'm poor, so I'm not paying for it. And I'm like, well, whatever, but like, how do you forget things like that? It's rather impressive. So anyway, welcome back for round two, Vic. Thanks for your patience and wanting to do this again.
No, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. It was fun last time. Hopefully we can have some fun this time.
Yeah. Well, you can't do drugs, but I can.
No.
not everybody needs that for fun though, right?
Well, you know what? Like running shoes, they only help you run faster. They're not going to slow you down. It's kind of that thing.
That's true. So real quick about you, you know, it's kind of funny to almost try to repeat like a conversation we have. So I'm not going to try to repeat everything, but just the things that come to mind really quick. But the first time I met Vic was when I was working at the Naval Air Station. I had just retired from the Army and I went to work for the Navy for some reason, but I'm glad I did because I met a lot of cool people and I learned about the Navy. But I guess I had only been there maybe like 3 or 4 months. And this dude walks in, and I'm going to say a kid, because to me, he looked like a young guy, like a really young kid, but he comes in wearing a suit. And I immediately think he's coming to sell us something. And then since he was, because he was selling himself, but you know, you were working at the university and, you know, your idea was to come in and try to get some time with, because you hadn't gone to school yet to be an MC, or you had?
No, I had just gone to the school and I had just come out of it. And I wanted to, you know, I wanted to work in the field that I got into.
So you walked into the Naval Air Station CEO's public affairs office, and you're just like, check me out, yo. And you're like,
oh, I remember that day. Cool. I had gone to the, I think I had to go to the reserve center for something, right? Because I'm a Navy reservist, mm-hmm. and I was local, so I was always popping in and out. It was just easier, you know, with those folks, just to pin them down like in person versus trying to do everything over the phone or email, right? Because you have to wait a week, no one follows up. And I remember working at the university, and I just was like, still like in military mode. Like, I'm like, oh, dude, like, this is so annoying sometimes dealing with civilians. I was a director of development over there. So I was trying to raise money for the university, dealing with the student workers, dealing with, you know, some of the professors and the staff over there. And I was like, you know what, let me just stop in this PAO office and see what they're doing. Cause I got to do my AT anyways. And I know the air show is coming up, and, you know, I used to be a master arms military police over there at AES Corpus. So I was used to being stuck in the parking lots, and I was tired of being in the parking lots, parking cars while everyone's having fun. So, I walked in and I introduced myself and said, hey, you know, you guys need some free labor. I'd be more than happy to help you guys out. And I think you guys took advantage of that.
Gratefully so. It's America. Everyone's going to get taken advantage of some point or another. Like, well, your reward is your experience. You're like, oh man, I think that's invaluable. Could I pay my bills now? Thank you. Like, no, you cannot pay your bills, sir. This is America. We're not going that tangent yet. But I'm really glad you did. I mean, it was really cool. It was a great way to present yourself. Like, I'm not good at that. And I've learned that over the years. You know, I'm not good at walking into a room and just being like, hey, I'm this guy. This is what I have to offer. And if you don't take my offer to, you know, come and work with you or for you, then you're a fucking idiot. So you be able to do that. And that's like a great confidence you have. And so being a guy that was partially raised in New Jersey, partially raised in Corpus, like, where do you get that confidence from? Where did that build from?
So I think a lot of it grew. So from a lot of, you know, insight and internal reflection and whatnot, I realized a lot of that came from just me masking who I was, right? Like, I was not this confident guy. I was not this confident kid either. I was very shy. And I knew that I had to project what I wanted to be. And, you know, I was a three-piece suit and tie kind of guy. And that helped me create this persona that helped me get, you know, the position at the university, helped me walk into the rooms that just open up doors, right? Because if you can exude this confidence, even though deep down inside I'm like this very like shy person with a bunch of insecurities, it helped me come out of my shell, and it's opened up a lot of doors, not just, you know, for you and I, but, you know, everywhere else in my career, you know?
Yeah. No, that's cool. I think a lot of people do that though. You know, it's like, and maybe not going as far as a 3-piece suit, cause that's pretty baller, but you know, like you gotta add what, the vest, you're adding the vest to that at that
point. Adding the vest to it. Yeah.
But what's cool with that, you can rip that jacket off, roll up your sleeves, man. And you can be like almost like a presidential candidate and show that you're with the people out there, like picking trash up by the side of the road. And then you put that jacket back on and you go to a press conference and everyone's like, wow, that guy's a baddie, dude. And you know, you feel good about yourself, and so do they. So
yeah, for sure.
But I think a lot of people though do mask that. And something I read recently, which was interesting, was about like the decline of people's social skills, like the decline of people being able to converse in person, go to a restaurant and tolerate a crying baby instead of, you know, losing their shit it. This little stuff. And part of it has to do with social media, is because we've distanced ourselves, but we also see online people's problems where it's like, nah, I want to deal with that person or whatever. I already know what that person's like, so why do I care to get to know them any further or something like that, right? And then the pandemic happens, and then we're like forced to socially distance. We're forced to just do this and only talk this way for a while. Yeah. And so it starts to erode. And so, I mean, maybe it comes to a point that you have to figure out how to really present yourself well, despite the fact of having like internal flaws and things. And I think that's common. You know, we have people running for president that are like that. Like, we know they're extremely flawed, but they're really good at presenting that they're not. I think that's common, but it's part of leadership. And that's the other thing too. I think it's really part of leadership. And so recently you became a chief, and congratulations on that once again.
Thank you.
And now it's been a few months, I suppose. But
The imposter syndrome has worn off. The imposter syndrome has worn off.
Now. Well, good. So what's changed for you now since becoming a chief? Like, how have your interactions changed? How do people, you know, in the Navy speak to you?
Oh man, there's a huge. So there's one of the big things that they harp on through chief season is being humble, right? And I thought that this was just a lesson for me, right, to be humble, because that's the one thing that I needed to work on. But what I've learned is that they try to instill it in everybody across the platform, because when you're a chief, right, you're it doesn't matter if you've been a chief for 3 days or you've been a chief for 10 years. People look up to you, right? Sailors look to you, even as a senior NCO, right? They're looking to you as for all the answers, and you're like, oh, I just put these on, like I don't know what's going on. So a way that's helped me do that is I used to be really quick about spitting out answers, or at least spitballing answers, right? Shooting from the hip. And I've stopped that now, because shooting from the hip can give bad advice or bad info. And, you know, us Navy chiefs, we're not about giving bad info. So I've taken the time to stop, slow down. You know, it doesn't need to be a 15-second response. I can respond and you know, in a regular amount of time that'll enable me to get a bunch of info and give the right information. And so I think that's the biggest change for me. Right now they're sending me out to Japan to go take over the CTF-70's change of command ceremony and everything they're going over there on the Reagan. So it's like, mind you, I've never been out to sea. I mean, I think you've probably spent more time on the water there at NES Corpus than I have, you know. And
I went, I guess, to go on a yacht once. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. So for me, going out to sea is it's something new. I'm excited for it. You know, I'm a little nervous, but hey, you know what? I'm a sailor. It's what we're supposed to do. Sailor sail. So here we go.
You said CTF?
Yeah. Yeah,
what
CTF
70s. What does that stand for?
So they're like the forward deployed task force of the 7th Fleet.
Okay.
So they're the ones dealing with all the big, it's a high viz kind of ceremony. And that's why they want somebody specifically there to kind of cover.
Is there CO, everything. The guy on Twitter that's Chowda Hill? Have you seen his Twitter?
I have not. No.
I think he's the CEO of the Reagan, maybe the Eisenhower. I don't know. They're in the Persian Gulf and conducting operations. So maybe not, because you were saying Japan, right? So I think, but I mean, I don't know if they're based out of Japan. I'm not 100%.
Yeah, but, yeah. they're based out of Japan, or you know, that area of operation.
Find it real quick. So this dude is a master on social media, man, and it's kind of cool because he's an admiral, I suppose, right? And he posts a lot of things with his, if I get technically advanced, I'll try to put it up onto the edit here. I don't know what I'll do later, right?
Yeah.
But he posts a lot of stuff with his sailors, and he brings them up into the what would it be, the masthead?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He brings them up into the what is it, the deck where you know all the nav stuff is, and the
sailors. Remember, I'm not a seafaring sailor, so yeah. Like where the wheelhouse is at and stuff.
Yeah. They say it on like Star Trek, you know, you have the con, whatever. And I guess
the bridge to the bridge.
The bridge. Yeah, the bridge. So he brings sailors up to the bridge, and he, you know, gives them, he interviews them. He has a quick interview. He posts a picture. Okay. Like this one, if that's decently visible, but he's taking a picture of a sailor, and he has a quick little synopsis about him. And it's, and he like does it for like their parents or their loved ones. And he's like, you know, Petty Officer Jones says hi to his wife, Sheila, and their 12 kids or whatever, you know, and it's just kind of cool. And then he gives him a cookie that I don't know where he's getting these cookies from, but maybe the best haul or whatever. But he's been doing this for a while, and then he'll have some stuff that probably their PA was putting out, like, you know, jets taking off and going and bombing cool shit or whatever. But dude, he's got like, let me see real quick again. He has a ton of followers. He's up to 66,000 followers.
Wow. And
so he's the CEO of CVN-69.
Okay.
I don't remember what ship it is, though. I mean, he has it in there somewhere, but I guess that's Googleable. CVN-69er. But it's cool. But it's cool. He's like,
That's Eisenhower.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they've been, sorry, I have an itchy ear because I'm old. They've been doing operations in that area. And so everything that's been going on supporting, I guess, bombing Iranian paramilitary stuff like that.
Yeah.
They've been doing that. And it's baller. Yeah. That is.
And you know what? That's kind of cool, actually. Hold on. All these dogs want to be all over by my. Hold on, give me one second.
That always happens. It's okay. This, like, is the power of editing.
The whole house, and they want to be sitting right underneath me.
Usually, I'm surprised mine's not in here, but I think because Hunter's home, he's hanging out with him. But because they'll hear me talking, and I guess they get curious, like, who are you talking to?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know anybody's in there. Like, are you petting another dog in there?
I bet you're talking to a dog right now. Hunter's gotten into I always forget, not Underdog, Dogman books recently. It's like Captain Underpants, Dogman, all that.
Oh, okay.
That, and it's great because he's like, his reading has picked up phenomenally because he found something they found at school, of course, because I'm useless. But like they found him. Yeah. And like his reading has picked up amazingly. He'll just flip through pages and he's like just blasting through. And I'm like, right on, dude. I don't know how we got here, but as far as the Navy ship goes, just thinking about that, yeah, with like leadership and everything. So that dude doesn't know everything, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like with the chief, it's like when I become a senior NCO, you start realizing you don't have to know everything, but what's really helpful is if you can point your people in the right direction, or you provide the tools for them, the assets, and then your job now is really to develop them to replace you someday. And so that's like one of the bigger learning lessons. And you know, I'm sure you've been under people. I was under people who didn't grasp that concept. They wanted to gatekeep their role. They wanted to like as if they were never going to go away, or you were going to steal part of their salary if you could do their job. You know, and it's,
well, and you know, I used to be a military police officer, and I feel like a lot of those guys, those old school guys. I've been in the Navy 15 years, right? And so when I first got in, those old school guys still existed, where, you know, in the civilian world, they were like Border Patrol, they were ICE, or they were canine handlers, or law enforcement. And I was not that. I was this, you know, young kid who sold cars and worked at cell phones, so sold cell phones. So I definitely saw a lot of that, where I, you know, they would kind of, you know, raise their nose to me when I wanted to put myself in leadership positions within the Navy side of the house. You know, they're like, you know, you sell cell phones, how can you ever do this kind of stuff? And so, yeah, man.
My kid.
Yeah, exactly. Now I'm like, and I'm like, And so now something that I heard, if you really want to help your sailors, stop helping them. And I'm like,
yeah,
that's stupid.
Don't baby them.
Right. That's dumb. But it, yeah, don't baby them. And, you know, I have a first class that I put in the Navy. Like when I was recruiting, I put him in the Navy. And he's coming from your last life. And I'm like, bro, you are now at the same, like, you've been in now 7 years. That's how many years I was in when you met me. Right. You know, it's time for you to start being the stepping up and being the first class that you need, that you needed, that's like that I was for you. And he's just like, at first I can tell, like, he kind of took offense to it, but then he's like, oh, no, you're right. I need to start getting on the game now, you know? So yeah, it's a weird transition for me. And they always say, oh, it's, you know, when you become first class, right, when you put E6, like, you know, it's different because they're going to start treating you like a chief, but it is a huge shift. It's a huge shift when you become a chief and you put anchors on, you know?
Yeah, I think, like I've told you before, is my experience from being in the Army for 20 years and then going to work for the Navy. It was massive culture shock. And initially when I started, and I know I told you this before, is that whenever I had started in the 2016, summer of 2016, somewhere in the next like 30 to 60 days, the Navy and their infinite wisdom decided to do away with rates as like,
oh yeah,
dress people and writing. And I was like, yes, because I had to write all that shit, you know, every time, you know, it's like, instead of just writing Petty Officer Jones, you're going to write like electronic warfare specialist with a third degree black belt and blah, 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 technician Jones. And I'm like, so they're walking around every time you talk to somebody. So what's your rate? And they're like, you can't tell, bro. And I'm like,
no. It used to be a lot easier. We used to wear like our rates on our sleeves back in the old unit when I first got in, and you could tell who was who and what they did. But now, yeah.
Better. Yeah, so I applauded them getting rid of that. And then what, within 90 days, they were like, sorry, that was a bad idea. And that's one of those things, too, where so whoever the CNO was at the time and the Master Chief of Chief Master Chief, right? No.
The MCPOM, Command Master, Master Chief. Master Chief Petty Officer of the Navy.
The Chief Master Chief. That would be so dumb. But anyway, it's like, well, redundancy is... But like they didn't listen to anyone. They obviously didn't talk to anyone. They talked to someone who probably was just a yes man. And they were like, yeah, that's a great idea, Tom. Let's do that. And he was like, oh, okay. And then everybody just bagged. But I applaud them for admitting the mistake and then changing it back. Because a lot of, dude, in the Army, nah. We lived with that stupid effing Black Beret for like 10 years before they finally said, this shit's dumb. It makes no sense. It's like 110 degrees almost everywhere we're at. Why are we wearing a stupid ass beret, dude?
It was wool beret.
Nasty. Oh, it was horrible. I was stationed at Fort Sam when they changed it over. It was General Shinseki. That guy can kick rocks for the rest of his life. He's the one that made that decision. Chief of Staff of the Army. I was stationed at Fort Sam where, you know, they're in the summer. It's 95 degrees, 180% humidity. And then we're doing guard duty after 9/11. All these things, you know, and like sometimes they let us wear a patrol cap, sometimes they wouldn't, you know, and you're just like, dude, come on. Like, why?
For real.
They would just get so stinky. But yeah, like they never admitted their mistake until it was like three or four generals later. We're like, let's go back to the patrol cap. This is dumb.
Yeah, but millions of dollars spent on them.
Oh yeah. And every God, they look so bad, dude. They look so bad, especially with people with big hair. You know, like it just
well. See, and I've worked for a couple of admirals now on the information warfare side of the house, and some things that I've learned is that some admirals like to create change, right? So they can put that document trying to get another star or whatever. And some admirals, you know, they just want to see things work more efficiently, right? And I mean, the Navy's had so many uniform changes. Somebody's up there saying, "Yeah, we need this," but it's like, okay, well. Let's be very practical with what we need. Like, do we really need, you know, an extra dress uniform, or do we need something that's going to keep us warm for like when we're standing, like you said, like we're out doing guard duty. Like what's practical, what's functional, you know? So, you know, those, as long as I'm a CELRES, so they pay for my uniforms, but if I had to pay for them, I'd be a little upset. I'd be upset every time they change them.
Oh yeah. It gets pricey. I mean, I think we went through three uniforms while I was in. Like, let's go back to the 1900s before the internet was really a thing.
Before the Great War on Terrorism.
God, I'm telling you, man. It's so crazy. when I think back to that, I'm just like, God, I don't know my kids. My kids are like, Dad, you were like, you joined the army in the previous millennium. You know, it's like, what are you talking about? You don't understand.
At the turn of the century, Dad. You're there at the turn of the century.
Yeah. Like,
they're gonna have like pictures of you and they're like, this is my dad, you know, and it's just you all grumpy with your coffee and like, he was a war veteran over here. Like they do. From have you seen 1900s. Those old like. Like, he entered his service in the year of the Lord 1999 kind of thing.
Like to the great world wars happened in the same century. And when I joined, I was like, nothing's going on. This is great. This is going to be really cool, bro. I'm going to breeze through a few years and get out. And then, you know, you re-enlist one time and they're like, bam, war. Like,
gotcha. You know, like, yep.
Fucking assholes, man. So, man, I was going somewhere, but I forgot. It's all right.
The leadership in the Navy on the chief side, yeah. We did that. Really, really cool experience. I think for those that are not in the Navy or Coast Guard, you know, going through chief season, right? It's like an extra step of learning process. And you know, to those viewers out there who are, you know, senior enlisted and want a different, a new and different challenge, I challenge you guys to go through chief season with the chiefs and. You know, learn something a little bit new, bring it back to your branch, and then hopefully implement some good stuff there.
No, absolutely. And that was one of my learning curves was, and I know we had talked about this in our previous interview that no one will ever see. But when I was at AFN in Korea, I was getting replaced by Chief Select, and she was going through the Chief Select school, right? What'd you call it?
Season. We call it season. Chief season.
Little season, what? little paprika.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. And I just remember that someone had called me from, I guess, you know, I don't remember where the I should have looked this up in the last 4 months, but the Navy base that was in Korea. But someone called me from there and they were like, hey, man, just let us know if whatever her name was, you know, leaves her box sitting around or a book or whatever. And I'm like, you're asking me to like narc on my replacement? Are you out of your fucking mind? I was like, no, dude. I was like, this ain't happening. I'm like, this, it's hard enough. Like, I could see, like, she was already sweating bullets through this whole process because she would have to go down there for like 2 or 3 days and come back up. And she was learning the job for me and all this stuff. And I'm like, why would I make her life harder? I'm just not going to do that, you know? But I did respect the process. And then, especially when I went to work at the Naval Air Station and then, you know, got to document a couple of promotions to chief and, pinning ceremonies and things like that. I mean, the tradition, it's really great. I mean, it's really rad. I think the other services, they don't come anywhere close to, you know, kind of rivaling, whatever that, heraldry, that tradition, whatever that the Navy does. I think it's really cool.
That process,
and I hope it never changes. Yeah. It should never, ever change, you know, and it would suck if it does. I mean, there's enough changes going on. I had a friend send me a picture the other day. There's a couple of dudes in the army that are becoming infamous on TikTok because they're bearded and they're like one dude calls himself the bearded chief or whatever. And he's like, he's a warrant officer. And he's just like, how are these guys having beards? I mean, they're beards. They're not like
pretty big,
you know, a shaving profile, a chick or whatever. It's like, it's, and I'm thinking like, I don't know.
Like, well, the newest thing out right now is paganism. Is, you know, if you convert to paganism and you can have, but you still have to funnel, you know, run it up the chain of command, get something for medical, but you'll have to keep it. But some guys are doing it, you know, which is fine, whatever, you know, you want your beard that bad.
Yeah. You know, you want to stick out that badly to the command sergeant major. That's me walking across the field. Or that crusty old chief who's going to just light your ass up regardless. And you want to be like, well, but I have this document as soon as I can have that beard. And they're like, they're going to take that document. They're going to shove it up your ass. If it's worth it that much, then, you know.
And, you know, the thing that I've learned, I actually learned this from a black chief, right? He, you know, the common thing with that type of skin is, you know, the whole getting the pimples, ingrown hairs.
Yeah.
And he, because I would get it real bad, right? But he's like, nah, you just don't know how to take care of your face. So he taught me how to cleanse my face, how to wash it, how to, you know, scrub it and exfoliate. And then my beard started going out thicker and, you know, then I didn't have any of those skin problems, but a lot of it was just, I just didn't know how to wash my fucking face, you know?
Little things like, don't shave against the grain. Like I learned that when I was deployed and I was shaving one day with a cold, cold water, shitty razor. This guy's next to me, and I'm going like, on my neck.
Those orangey yellow razors with the white caps, right?
Dude, horrible. You could probably if you had to, but
yeah,
this guy's just like, what are you doing, man? He's like, you can't shave that way, bro. He's like, you know, and just talks me through this whole process, and I'm like, fuck, man, changed my life right there. A moment of leadership that he didn't even think about, but it changed my life for the better going forward, you know, where I just shaved better and now I don't care. It's the best. I only have my beard. Go ahead.
No, I'd say the only time I shave now is real weekends. Otherwise, I have a full beard out, you know, and I just came off real weekends past the weekend. So, you know,
but I'll usually trim it if I have something important to do, like a job interview.
Clean it up a little bit.
Yeah, and then I regret it later, and I'm like, oh, I don't do that. I don't want that.
Like, who is that man? Ew, he's so gross.
Yeah. And then, or if I get tired of the gray, because it's like my whole beard now is just so gray, dude, and so white. And it's
I'm starting to get the gray in here, and at first I was kind of like plucking them, and I'm like, you know what, like, why, like, let it grow out naturally, you know, because wisdom. I was gonna say it's a lot to do with wisdom now, right? Because I'm into my Uncle Iroh era, and so, you know,
how old are you now?
Taken care of. 36 now.
36, yeah. Well, yeah.
36, but yeah.
That transition is starting to come. Yeah, you'll hit 40, and it'll a little more gray, and you won't even notice it, dude. And then suddenly you're like 43, 44, and you're like, holy shit, I'm like, you're really like, gray, dude.
Salt and pepper. Well, see, it's funny because So my dad, full head of hair, black hair, even to this day. And then I have an uncle who's younger, my younger uncle. And by the time he was 30, he had salt and pepper hair. Like, and so I'm seeing my brother, like, I'm the one with the darker hair, full head of hair, and my brother's getting the salt and pepper hair, like, really bad. And he's 3 years younger than me. And so now his name's Greg. And so instead of saying gray hairs, we say, oh, we got Greg hairs, you know, teasing him a little bit. But yeah, I mean, like, he looks good. I'll just let it grow out and, you know, hopefully look just as good as him.
So tell me about how you approach fatherhood and how you were raised and some of the lessons you learned, you know, life lessons or whatever, but some of those things that you apply to fatherhood today.
So I would say, oh man, going all the way back. So I was a young 19-year-old. I went to Texas A&M, Flight Tech Saggy, and had a commission from the Marine Corps, right? Guaranteed flight commission Marine Corps. Got my girlfriend pregnant. You can't have dependents while on scholarship, so I got dropped from the scholarship. Ex-father-in-law was retired Mass Chief, and I was in JRTC at 4-H Moody High School, so it just made sense for me to join the Navy, right, to do all that. And I realize now the reason why I did all those things without really talking to anybody or really, you know, just made the decision on my own is because I wanted to be able to provide for my children as a father, right? Or have someone to lean back on.
Yeah.
And so I've always kept that in the back of my mind. But the reality is I was just worried about being like my dad, who was a deadbeat, not involved in my life, even as an adult, very, very rarely. And if he was, it wasn't like a good influence kind of thing. And so the thing that I've taken the most out of being a father is just being who you needed, right? Because, and I'm sure you've seen it, you've got kids all the way up and all the way down, but, you know, going into the anxiety and fear that you have of going to kindergarten for the first day. Like, I remember that and having nobody, going to the bus by myself and just figuring it out. So I don't want my kids to experience that. I don't want them to experience poverty the way I experienced it. I don't want them to have to choose between, you know, doing one extracurricular activity over another because of funds or whatever, right? So I've really tried my best just to be who I needed, whether it's emotional ear or support like that for the older kids now that they're going through breakups and, you know, arguments and relationship stuff, to something as small as like, I'm hungry at night, you know, like, you know what, my mom would have been like, go to sleep, you know. And I'm like, you know what? We got time for a banana. Let's go eat a banana. Let's go grab an apple. Let's, you know, let's have a couple Oreo cookies before we go to bed. Like, we'll brush our teeth again in the morning. Don't worry about it. And it's like simple things like that, that, you know,
right,
instead of going to sleep hungry, you know, like, what's food insecurity and trauma and abandonment issues? Like, we're not going to have that here. If we're going to have issues, it's because, you know, your family's too involved, not involved enough.
Sure.
So,
because you're giving them a support system that they're learning and how it should be. And because it still blows my mind today to be in, like, I've left groups on Facebook because I'll see like some stupid meme, right? And parents, like our age type parents, who are basically condoning like shitty parenting, you know, just based off a meme. And I'm just reading it, and I'm going like, no, you fucking assholes. Like, that's the reason your kid hates you. That's the reason you probably hate your own parents. But you're like, yeah, but it was okay. It keeps them off the streets. And I don't think so.
Like,
I don't think it does.
And like, no fault to my mom, but I'm like, yeah, I was disciplined as a child, but like, I was afraid of you. Like, I was scared of you. Like, my entire childhood was like fearing you. And I don't want my kids to, like, I don't spank my kids. Like, I don't. But I'm not like, I explain to them and talk to them like why we don't do things. And I really haven't had any issues with like my teenagers. Yeah, they'll do dumb shit. I'll sit down and explain to them. Like, for example, like some folks have their teenage daughter sneak out at night, right? Well, my teenage daughter's sneaking out at fucking 5:30 in the morning to get to school early to hang out with her boyfriend so they can go to class together. And I'm like,
that's a tough
one. If you want to go to school early, like, let me know. But the fear that I explain to her is I don't want to get a phone call at 6 in the morning, right? And hey, get a phone call like, hey, Vic, just so you know, you're the parent of Lit. Well, she died in a car accident. No, my daughter's downstairs. My daughter's downstairs asleep. She takes the bus at 7, you know? And I told her, I was like, how shitty would that be for me to get that phone call, you know? And once I explained them in that way, they're like, oh, fuck, that would be really shitty. Like, you know, and it kind of deters them. But
yeah,
man, I love being a dad. I love seeing my kids kind of go through the stages that I went. I remember like my insecurities, being that insecure kid. And it's weird because I can afford to get them whatever type of American Eagle, Abercrombie, whatever clothes they want. And these kids are happy with like off-brand JCPenney's, Arizona jeans, like thrifting. And I'm just like, yeah. This is, y'all are weird.
It's a whole different generation. It's minor. Yeah. Minor. Like they don't care about brand name stuff. I think maybe the most, you know, expensive kind of things they want to get into has to do with like gaming or something. You know, I really want to get this video graphics card or whatever. And they're not worried about the clothes. I mean, half of them wearing sweats. Like, it's 90 degrees outside. They're still wearing a sweatshirt. And I'm like, why? Are you okay? And he's like, yeah, it's just comfortable. I'm like, bro, there's no way it's comfortable. And then an hour later, when you happen to be at, like, Disney World, they're like, can I get a t-shirt? Because it's too hot. I'm like, no. you can walk back to the resort. And
no, you need to wrap that around you. Wrap that around your waist. Yeah.
Wrap that around your waist. Yeah,
yeah, it's cool.
It's a whole different, yeah, and I think it's cool. Like, I you know, my oldest is in college, and he has 2 years to go, and then he'll be out on the streets, you know, unless he carries on or whatever. But we've started to talk about the economy and, you know, his ability to buy a house one day and do all these things that we were, you know, taught to just rise up through the pyramid and the things you're supposed to want and do and everything. And, you know, you just come to a realization is that our kids probably will never be able to buy a house unless they're making 7 figs. And even then, mm-hmm. it's going to be like moderate compared to what you could have gotten a few years ago making 7 figs, because it's just insane right now. And so without going down entire like that rabbit hole of the whys and whatever, because I don't think anyone really understands why, but it's like, mm-hmm. That's such a concern. And so I think like you have to approach your parenting to kind of massage those fears and anxieties, because that's going to build. They're going to be like, how am I going to rent an apartment, man? Because again, going mm-hmm. back to whether it's Miami or Los Angeles, or it's like Omaha, Nebraska, everything's way overpriced. And if you're like, mm-hmm. yeah, I live in Omaha, Nebraska, I can rent a 3-bedroom house for like $1,500 a month. They also pay like relatively the same to like whatever that is. So whatever you're not, yeah, you're always, you're going to just get kind of bone no matter where. So, but I think about that with approach to parenting, and these kids today have, you know, like we probably had different like fears and anxieties about becoming an adult whenever we were kids, but I think it was a little more simplistic. And these guys are now looking at it in a different lens, and they're mm-hmm. seeing so much get fed to them all the time that it's like, I don't know, what am I going to do? And you're probably going to have more kids living with their parents, I think, longer going forward, which is, you know, I'm mm-hmm. always like, yeah, that's fine. Well, see,
and I tell my kids, I'm like, you know, I bought 2.5 acres in Eastern Washington. Taxes mm-hmm. are extremely low here. And like I'm instilling in my kids this communal aspect of the family, right? Because I didn't have that. I have 5 other brothers and sisters, but I never grew up with any of them. But I want them to now grow up with each other. You guys may not all get along 100% or like whatever, you know, you may not interact with each other, but, you know, I hope that at the end of the day, you guys can work together to a common goal. So like, I agree to explain to the kids, live with me as long as you can, right? You have responsibilities and stuff here. You know, I'll build a compound here that we can have, because like you were saying, the only reason why I was able to afford what I could afford is because I have the VA loan, right? I don't have to pay PMI. So it saves me $400 or $500 a month to do that. And then if I build, you know, a swimming pool, you know, a couple of, I want to put a barn and medium out there. I want to have a shop. I want to put it on a couple concrete slabs so that way I can have friends who have RVs come and visit and hang out, or put my own RV out there for family to come visit. But that's what I'm trying to instill now, because like you said, I see the future, and there's no way my kids will be able to afford, you know, even with the college degree. And even then, like I push vocational school to the kids too now, you know, and I'm like, hey, you know, I wish I could go back and be an electrician. It'd be really nice to be an electrician. I could do this stuff, or, you know, working with my hands. So, yeah, man, it's one of those weird spots where you want them to grow up and you want them to be successful and out on their own. But at the same time, it's like, you know, like realistically, like they're not going to, they don't have the same American dream as we did, you know?
Yeah.
Or they won't be able to, you know?
It's owned. It's been bought. And so, yeah, in my oldest, he's going to Texas Tech for mechanical engineering. And he's brought up more than once to me, he's like, well, sometimes I just want to get my certificate in welding, because he learned to do welding in high school. And I'm always like, yeah, you can probably do fine doing that. Just understand the hustle. Like you're unless you go to work for a company and then you're doing it by how they want you to do it, they're going to pay you the set amount or whatever. If you're an independent contractor, you can probably do better. But understand the hustle is you're going to sell yourself and your work's going to sell you. But, you know, but there's also like a pretty decent danger involved with welding too, that I don't get excited about, you know, and I'm kind of like, well, why don't you let's finish that degree, get that in your pocket. And then if you want to weld, go weld, bro. But at least you have that to fall back on, you know, maybe you do consulting, whatever it might be, you know. But I think these kids are going to have, they're going to have to be Swiss Army knives, you know, and they're going to have to just be multi-skilled, multi-branded, and willing to do a balancing act. And it sucks. Like it sucks for them. And I think about too, I'm like, I wish I could take these boys and go live like in Nicaragua, Costa Rica, something like that, you know?
Yeah.
You can go to the dentist for $5 and get the same care that you get here for like $900. And you know, just all those little things, dude. It's like, it's really difficult to try to tell them keep working hard, because one day you'll be able to rent a one bedroom apartment for like $8,000 a month.
You and your family. And it's like, well, and you know, too, like where the kids are going to school now, they have like a vocational type of school. And so my oldest is going to the culinary like program there, and is absolutely loving it. And they came to me and told me, did you know how many people don't know how to cook? I'm like, yeah, I know. That's why, you know, that's why do you think all my friends want to come over here? Because I know how to fucking cook. And they're like, yeah, I'm noticing these are like really life skills that we're learning. And I'm like, just to brag a little bit of my kid, he was chosen to do a 5-course meal in the fall, to lead the 5-course meal. And so from me wanting my kid just to know how to sustain themselves, right, not have to eat out all the time, be able to cook food, to now this kid is fucking planning a 5-course meal. Like for the school. And I'm just like,
that's baller.
Like what a good program, because I pushed, hey, you need to go get some more experience out there, you know? And he's doing full-time CB. So they have a running start program where you go to college, right? So you can graduate with your associates by the time you graduate high school. And they're doing that and doing the, you know, the culinary stuff. And I'm just like flabbergasted at the skills that they can learn if they're really interested in it, and how much motivation they can have as far as getting to school. Because this kid wants all A's and he's doing it while, you know, having a really shitty schedule and waking up early and going to sleep late and washing and doing all the chores here in the house. So
it's crazy. And maybe they're seeing that. That's almost like that's what it's going to take.
I'm sure they see us hustle, right?
Right. You know, and they don't want to be uncomfortable. They don't want to worry about like whether or not they can pay a water bill this month, or if they're going to have to call somebody to like beg for some aid or something, you know, and they don't want to be in those shoes. And I mean, and that's good though. They're learning those lessons from their parents, as they should.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we try to have this good foster environment where everyone's included, and, you know, school's a priority. Like, I actually reached out to my ex just now. Well, just recently, cause I got the kids' grades back. And so they both have all A's except one D. One's got a D in math and one's got a D in English. And I sent it to my ex and she's just like, what do we do? You know, D's are unacceptable and we need to get them in tutoring. Who do we contact for that? And I'm like, well, wait a minute. I think if they were all D's and C's, we would have an issue, right? Yeah. But I think our kids have heard us say a little bit too much, you know, with our chest. So we used to say D's equal degrees, put your effort where you get the most ROI. And that's what I asked them, like, hey, what are you guys doing with these classes? Well, honestly, if I sat and studied even just to get a C, it would take so much more time. I'd rather put that time and effort into other things, which I concede because they have A's in other classes. So I'm trying to change that perspective of, you know, you have to have all A's and you need to have good grades. And it's like, well, the reality is, you know, when I went to college, I put my eggs in the baskets that had the most return. And that's exactly what my kids are doing. So like, how can I get mad at them? But to understand and grasp that concept in high school versus like me, I was, you know, in my mid-20s before I figured that out. But yeah, hopefully they just find something that works for them.
Sure. No, absolutely. I mean, I think it's there's a lot of options out there now, but like seeing kids want to work with their hands is amazing. Mm-hmm. When I have friends that I see, their children have joined the military, and I say children, they're like 18, 19, but or just like that Navy captain's Twitter, and I see young people in the military, I kind of get excited, man, because honestly, like right now, if I'm 18 or 19, there's no fucking hey, I'm joining the military, dude. Like, I don't know. This is this mentality, so it might be different, you know. But you know, and I don't even know the incentives that are there anymore. But I would just look at it like, man, I'm not going off to fight your wars, you old, you know, the senators and the congressmen.
Pause that for a second. Let me grab the dog real quick, and then I'll talk to you about that because
I'm in a bebop.
So I'm 15 years in, going on 16 years, and I remember being a young junior sailor and wanting to deploy and wanting to be in the shit and in the fight. And now that I look back at it, I'm like, yeah, war is a young man's game. It's not like I'm broken and, you know, I've got kids to feed now and other priorities. And so when I see these kids, you know, I want to go and be a Navy SEAL and I want to do this high speed stuff. And it's like, you know what? We need people like you that are capable of doing that. But at the same time, like, you got to take care of yourself first. And I think trying to teach this younger generation is a lot easier because they know they're a lot smarter and they know that they'll get used up and spit out if they're not taken care of. But it's just, yeah, I war is definitely, a little scarier for me now as I get older because I know so much more of what's going on in the world and I understand the politics behind stuff and you know what this country is trying to do and what try not to do and you know trying to hide and what not to hide.
Yeah, but, and you probably can't say too much, you know, so that Chowda Hill or you know the Vice Admiral of the Navy doesn't call you directly and they're like, I was listening to that podcast. And for one, if that happened, I'd be like, thanks for listening to this podcast. It's reached very far. But number two, I'd be like, sorry, Vic. But like, it's tough, man. And even since I've retired, I don't know. It's like you, I always say you want to be on the right side of wrong if there's going to be wrong. You know, you want to be on the right side of the fence. Even up on that other side of the fence, like you think to yourself, maybe they're right. But over here is where I live. It's where I'm fed. It's where I close my eyes at night. It's where my kids live. All these things, right? So you want to protect that. And I thought about this when I went to Iraq. Like the first time I went to Iraq in 03, I would think about like we had – it was like day three or something like that. And we ended up setting up like a small EPW camp. And, you know, we had some different like – who knows, man. They were either Iraqi soldiers or they were just random dudes. Nobody knows. We had like one interpreter for like 5,000 people, you know? Oh, geez. And And if you ever watch Generation Kill, you know, your interpreters are full of shit half the time. So,
yeah.
But the point is that, like, I would see these dudes and just think, like, I don't know them. They don't know me. Like, there's only the only reason they don't like me and I don't like them is because someone way up here told me to. They said, that's our enemy. And they were told the same thing, you know? They were told that we're their enemy and you must shoot them the moment you see them or something like that. And I'm like, why? They're just humans, bro. And, like, I won the birth lottery being born in the United States of America versus being born in Iran or Iraq or Pakistan or something like that. You could have been born everywhere. Anywhere. And I don't know how that works. I don't know, like, you know, someone's like shaking the ball and they're like, blah. And you're
throwing it out there.
Yeah, your soul happens to land in your mother's womb. But so I ended up getting a problem with that in my head where I just thought, like, man, the only reason I'll ever pull that trigger is if I know that guy's pulling that trigger, you know? That's like the only reason. Because otherwise I'm thinking, like, I have no reason to kill this guy. He don't fucking know me and I don't know him. So it's a weird thing. And so I've kind of struggled with that over the last several years. You want to vocalize that to people, but you also don't want to come off like you're, you know, anti-American and, you know, you got to write messages on the nukes, man, and all these things. And have you tried watching Masters of the Air on Apple?
I'm like four episodes deep. Like where they go to the first battle and one of them doesn't make. He tries to land and ends up crashing.
All the flak.
Yeah.
The Germans shoot in the air. And at first I didn't understand. I'm like, what are they talking about? And then I realized it's just junk. You know that they.
Being in the Air Force was like a little scary. That's back in the day.
Yeah, that was the moment. Yeah. But it's crazy to think about. Like it was one of them started getting a little bit of a conscience about. Bombing people that, you know, that didn't do anything wrong. They're just there. Yeah. And I read about that years ago with Air Force pilots and how when they'd go out on sorties and they bomb places or whatever, it just like really affects their brain. And even guys flying UAVs, just flying drones, and they go and hit some target or whatever. And they've never met that guy. They were just told to do it. But you've now just killed like a bunch of dudes. But I think the thing to always remember is that those dudes would probably slit your throat if they had the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so you're preventing that maybe for later, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's where I go back to being on the right side of the fence is always important. And so kids today, if they serve, you know, I think they have to have that in mind. And, you know, there's always going to be old assholes that send you off to fight their battles for them because, you know, they're not going to. That's always going to exist, you know, unless we live in some kind of utopian society. But it's...
Which ain't happening anytime soon.
It's not looking good. Not
everywhere.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. But it's not looking good. So, it's just... But, like, again, going back to fatherhood things, so that's kind of the whole point is just, like, conveying to your children that the world is this beautiful future and it's so bright. You think about graduation speeches at high school and they're like, and we're going to go forth and we're going to plant our flag and do great things. And I'm like, nah, man, you're probably going to be high tomorrow. You're probably going to know where you are. You're probably going to drop out of college. Like, it's like, you know,
you'll have three baby daddies by the time this all ends in the next 5 years. And
yeah, it's just, you know, let's hope they don't, but it's like still, it's just things are a lot more bleak than I think it was whenever, you know, I graduated high school in 96 and I guess you would have graduated like what, like 06, 05.
Yeah.
So, but it's still, I think things were looking pretty good. I mean, you were post 9/11, but I think like we still had a healthy economy and I'm sure maybe one of the biggest concerns for you and especially whenever you decided to join was war because I mean, hell, that was almost like surge time, you know, when you get out of high school and the surge was kind of crazy. Like when I went into Iraq was 03, bro, like we were like there for like 90 days and everything was cool. And I don't know if I told you this in the last time we talked, but I can test that if 4th Infantry Division, was it 4th ID or 1AD? I don't remember. It was either 1st Armored Division or 4th ID. I think it was 4th ID. When they came to the fight like 3 months later, they replaced the 3rd Infantry Division. Because they were like the lead army infantry division and they had already been in Kuwait for months before Iraq and they bitched and moaned they got to go home like after like you know, 6 or 9 months, but they had a lot of fighting. But anyway, the division that replaced them, they came in and they were like, what's up, motherfuckers? Let's go, our Rockies. We're going to kill you all, motherfuckers. And we're like, hey, everything's cool, bro. Everything's cool here. People are like falling in line. They're like, no, we're going to fight. And they started fucking up shit. They went north to Tikrit and Mosul and all these things. And the fighting came back up. Like, it intensified. You know, it's almost like, you know, the Iranian paramilitary forces that were already there. But they were like, oh, fuck yeah. You know, these guys want to fight. We're going to go fight them. And things just got tremendously worse, dude. And it's like, and it stayed bad for years. And I always go back to that. And I'm like, man, if we would have moved into sustainment operations right off the bat right there, I think things would have settled. You know, you needed diplomacy at that point. Saddam, dude, the Iraqi government fell over like a house of cards. I mean, it was just like, they were gone. And all you had to do at that point is say, you know, hey, all you guys come here. We're going to feed you. We're going to take care of you or whatever. Right. And you get all these people on your side. And diplomatic wise, I mean, they were like, Saddam was gone. I mean, people assumed he was dead like right away. And so no one had any fear anymore. And it was cool, man. Like, I met Iraqis that were just so thankful for like the change, the lack of fear in their life. Fast forward a year later, they were like, get the fuck out of here, guys. Like,
are y'all still here?
Dying. Yeah. They're like, you guys are causing problems now. And that's like, you know, that's been a bane for our society. I mean, you think about, we were in Afghanistan for over 20 years, man. And you're like, for what? Like, for what? You know, what came out of that good for the United States? Not a fucking thing. And that's so, for me, I get to say this. You don't get to say this, right? Because, like, I don't want you to get in trouble. But all the things that happen right now, I feel like they're a little bit more justified than they were like 20 years ago, because I feel like now there's the threat's a little bit more peaked. But I also feel like they'll sell that to us all the time, too. Like, every few years, you're like, you know, all this stuff. But right now, you do have NATO surrounding Russia, and he's kind of like, fuck off my lawn, dude. And like, Sweden just got approved. They're like part of NATO now. So like, Russia is literally surrounded. It's crazy.
Well, it's like one of those things where, like, if Canada is willing to bomb you, you probably did something pretty bad or wrong. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, if Canada's like, willing, like, give them the green light, boys.
Yeah.
And it's just, So, and you know, a lot of the stuff now, people don't realize, you know, how important information warfare is, right? Like, how important data collection and all that stuff is. And like, that's a war in and of itself that I don't think people understand or even have a concept of being able to grasp what they can collect on you, or, you know, or as a country, you know.
What do you think about like the TikTok situation?
So I personally love TikTok for what it's intended for. As far as like data collection and like, you know, this whole China and stuff like that, it's above me. It's above me. And of course, I don't go putting Auspex stuff on TikTok, but, you know, I consume and digest, and, you know, stuff will come up on my For You page, everything, you know. Like, right now, the big one is Israel and Gaza. That's, but again, you know, that's a front line that people are really not considering, you know, that militaries and social platform, you know, it's a social platform used to spread awareness, to spread misinformation, to spread information. And you just got to be smart with what you're consuming, you know. You, like they always say, you are what you eat. So if you're just going to be consuming all this tinfoil hat kind of conspiracy thing, that's what you're going to become. And, you know, I can't say I don't have a little bit of that in me, but you know, I honestly use it for like meal prep stuff, how to learn how to do things, how to, if I don't know how to do something, that's what I use it for. You know,
there's a lot of good information. There really is. Mm-hmm. And the big one I saw the other day, yesterday actually, was one of our representatives here in Texas, Dan Crenshaw, you know, Navy veteran and whatnot. He shared that the House and the Senate were passing. No, it was the House first, but they had a bipartisan bill passed to try again to force the ownership change of TikTok to the United States instead of China. It was like, we're not saying you can't be on TikTok, but we want America to own it. And I'm like, bro, you are like all these companies. You're trying to tell me that like Meta isn't snagging your data and all this stuff. But it goes back to that argument to be on the right side of the fence. And It's like, well, if I'm going to have my data stolen, might as well be an American company doing it, man. So these bots can call me selling me life insurance. While, you know, TikTok, on the other hand, I get really frustrated because as a business owner, you know, I try to brand and sell on TikTok and they make it really stringent and hard. But sometimes I applaud it because it's about as hard as Amazon. Like, I'm going through hell to try to sell on Amazon. And I'm just like, how do people sell like little widgets on Amazon left and right? But me trying to sell coffee on Amazon, they're like, we need this picture to be perfect. And all this random shit, dude. It's just like, it drives me crazy. I'm like, oh, fuck yourself. But because then you don't know if it's even worth it either. But anyway, the point with TikTok is that, like, I have a really good friend who used to be Special Forces, and he did communications in SF. So, you know, he got to probably see and hear a lot of stuff, you know, throughout time, you know, doing signal. And his big thing is like, if you're on TikTok, you're dumbass. He's like, you're a dumbass because they'll just take all your data. But I'm like, what the fuck do they care about me though? You know, like, I'm just me. What data are they gonna get from me? My low credit score, my debt. I'm like, cool. And they're gonna be like,
they're gonna find out I'm an ass man and not a tits man. Like, God forbid China knows that about me. You know, lure me in with a big booty Latina or something.
The American, yeah, that's how they're gonna get you, and they're gonna pay you $1 million to. And it's filled with bots and like a lot of stupid shit, you know, for sure. But there's a lot of good information too. And one of the things I've appreciated is like citizen journalism, is you get people getting out there and they're recording things. There's a guy in the Seattle area that he's been covering stuff for a while. He went over to Israel for a bit, you know, and I was like, bro, that's not like the suburbs of Seattle. You got to understand, a bullet catches anybody, you know?
Yeah.
I would never, dude. You know, I just, it's honestly, maybe if I had no kids.
Yeah. And see, that's another thing too. It's like, going back to the whole wanting to play, like, now I have kids to worry about. Like, if I don't come home, like, I'm gone for a weekend. My kids are like, it's a shambles when I get back, you know? So I can imagine if something really did happen to me. But yeah. Yeah. But yeah, TikTok's cool, you know, again, at your own risk of what you want. My brother works for Apple, and he's really big on, you know, because they're big on privacy and whatnot. And he's like, I want to limit my footprint. And I'm like, honestly, bro, it's too late. Like, you can't. It's already too late. You're already in. Like, if you have a cell phone and you don't have an analog phone, like, it's already too late for you, bro.
I was texting with somebody the other day about something of interest, and it pops up as an ad on Facebook, you know. And I know I've gone into settings with Facebook, and I'm like, don't sell my information, blah blah blah, whatever, you know. But to me, once you put that app on your phone, you've just opened the door to them, and they're all gonna do it. And so
and so, like, it's kind of like you said, you know, pick your poison. Like, I know we're talking about, you know, I have Google throughout the house and everything, and me and my wife can be talking about you know, like, my best friend's getting married in Vegas in June. Start talking about Vegas and this. The next thing we know, my FBI agent, that's what we said, my FBI agent sending me stuff on Vegas and what to do in Vegas. And I'm just like,
Victor, too soon, bro. Love these Las Vegas options. You're like, wait,
and I'm like, man. I didn't even type that. It was just, you know, verbal stuff. And so I see that there.
Go ahead.
No, keep going. Go ahead. You're
good. I was going to say, I love when I'm just watching TV. And then my Google, like, I have a pod or whatever in my living room, and it doesn't say anything that sounds like, hey, Google or whatever, but it suddenly just starts answering a question. And I'm just like, and I lose my shit with it, even though it's a stupid programmed robot. And I'm like, shut the fuck up, Google. And it's like, and it goes, or whatever. It's like, rude. But I'm always like, why, you know, I try to turn off active listening, things like that, unless you say something to it, but I don't think it ever turns off. And it's convenient. It is nice. I have it connected to like my lights and alarms in the house and all these things. So it's like, it's really convenient to have a nice smart home. But bro, the moment the Wi-Fi goes down or the power goes out, you're like, son of a bitch.
Like, back into being a caveman again.
Bro, I'm telling you, whenever the cell phone outage happened a couple of weeks ago when AT&T had no, I was like, this is how it goes. This is China.
They're like, oh, the Russians are doing it to us. They're coming in.
Yeah, I was convincing a friend that we were under attack. I was just texting him, and I'm like, yeah, everyone, AT&T, man, it's cyber warfare. China's coming. And he's like, you really think so? And I'm like, oh, yeah. I think he caught on eventually where he's like, asshole. But But to me, that's how they do it. I don't think we'll have direct kinetic warfare.
Did you see how, I don't know if you saw, Walmart just bought Vizio. So Vizio, like, not that I'm big into TVs, but like Vizio, yeah. I always like Vizio's made in the US, it's had an extra year of warranty. Yeah. And people are like, why would Walmart want to do that? That's so dumb. Why would they want to own Vizio? It's like, well, Vizio smart TVs is basically a billboard for Walmart in your house.
Sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you download apps or whatever that you watch Roku or whatever. Now Walmart's collecting all your data on exactly what you watch, what you know, your time you're watching them. And I'm like, smart on Walmart for doing that. Smart on Walmart for doing that. You know,
marketing runs everything. And I'm like, I'm sitting here trying to sell coffee to people, and they'll man, I have an ad running right now with this guy, and I try to hone my like target audience down like this smaller and smaller, because I feel like sometimes I'm too broad and whatever. But anyway, the point is, this guy, he left a comment on my ad where he just said, no reviews or comments, weird or something like that, right? And I'm like, first of all, there are. Like, I have, there's like just six, but I have six reviews on the Facebook for the brand. So I'm like, all right, how do I respond? And I'm not good at this. I'm not, because this is my thing, right? It's like, this is my baby. And so you're protective over it and all those things, right? And so when I feel like somebody's coming off like I'm scammy or whatever, you know, I'm just like, bro, like out of all things in the world, why would somebody use a coffee business, first of all, and create like a whole entire business page and have a website and product ads with my own face in it just so I can scam you for a few dollars? And then I'm thinking, like, there actually are pages out there that are like that in a sense, but they'll use things like Toyotas and they're like, you know, go to this link to sign up to win this brand new Toyota Tacoma. And everyone's like, oh, that's a good idea. And then
and next thing on your bank account's drained. And
yeah, dude. And so it's like, it's out there, and that's what's scary about it. And I think, like, I'd love to go analog and just start buying disc again. I was gonna Hunter wanted to watch Madagascar yesterday, and Madagascar used to be on Netflix. Well, now it's not. Now all you can do is buy Madagascar through Prime, you know. Well, what happens at some point when Prime's like, we're taking this off of our platform too, you know?
Yeah.
So then I'm thinking, I just need to go back to buying disc. But it's the convenience factor. It's all convenience factor for us right now. And man, if we ever lose that, it ever drops off, we'll have that'll be our own civil war.
Well, it's crazy you say that, because they're talking about like Atlanta. Let me put my tinfoil hat back on. So like Atlantis and all these advanced civilizations prior to all this stuff. And it's like, you think about it, if we were to go dark right now, everybody were to leave like off this planet, what would we have? Because everything's digital, right? We might have books, but in centuries those books are disintegrated or whatever. Like, we would have nothing. And I'm just like, oh, dude, maybe what if that's what happened to all these advanced civilizations prior to, you know? Did you ever hear about that story about that web, that he's like a software developer who went to go work for this video game company, fix an issue with one of the video games that he had, and then quit? Did you ever hear about that?
Nah.
Like, he went like, in, like, this guy.
He's like, all right, cool.
Yeah, I don't know if it was like World of Warcraft or it was some video game that he played online, and he was so annoyed with it that he got hired on to the company, fixed whatever little bug it was, and then fucking quit.
That's pretty cool.
And I'm just like, that's kind of baller, like, to be able to do that.
When you hire on Twitter then and figure out how to just
manipulate the algorithm. Like, show me the algorithm. Gross.
And that's the funny thing. So like with the politicians going after TikTok or whatever, I'm like, Twitter's so gross right now, dude. It's so out of hand. I mean, he hasn't really changed much. There's still all these porn bots, and they'll pop up in random things. Like, you know, I follow Disney accounts, or I'll follow sports accounts, and someone just posts something totally innocuous, just on subject to whatever their thing is. And right under, they'll be like, you know, fuck me in my bio, link here, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like, fix that shit, man, because like there's kids that might just, you know, kids shouldn't be on Twitter at this point whatsoever, because it's just like, he's all, well, freedom of speech, and I'm like, that's fine. Like, I should be able to go on Twitter and say, like, you know, fuck the president or whatever, not have repercussions. But I should be able to go on Twitter and not be worried about someone saying they're gonna ass rate me for fun, or I mean, whatever. Yeah. You know, it's like you're I don't know. I'm not an Elon fanboy.
I'm not,
I like
either.
Some of the things
I'm
he does, without a doubt. But I think that he's just another elitist, man. And now he's trying to get your sympathy where he's like, the state of Delaware is costing me my $56 billion salary. And I'm like, that's your fucking big money problems, bro. That's not, I don't care.
Yeah, first world problem.
Don't complain to the average person about that, you know. You figure that out. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so weird to me. It's almost like pro sports where people care about what a player makes, you know, and they're like, you got to re-sign this guy no matter what it costs. And they're trying to tell another rich guy, well, a rich guy, not another, but a rich guy, just drop like $20-$40 million a year investing into one person to perform amazingly well to put more money back in their pockets. And that, to me, those just sound like horrible investments.
Yeah.
Terrible. But exactly. they're for one, they're not going to hear you. And number two, those are big money elitist problems that the 99% of the rest of us will never have. And probably for the most part, you could almost welcome not being wealthy. I mean, I'd love to have good money, but dude, if you're wealthy, people would never stop knocking on your door, selling you their ideas or trying to guilt you. You know, why didn't you send my kids presents at Christmas time, Vic? What's your problem? I'm like your third removed cousin and you don't even care about us. You're like, nope, I don't. You'd have to change your name, your phone numbers, you know, have a wall around
everything on there, all these things. Exactly. And you know, when it comes, like, I always tell the kids, like, money comes and goes, don't worry so much about money. But I find my kids still worrying about money, like, oh, I don't want you to spend your money on this because it's a waste. I'm like, if you want to go, you know, that's why I get paid child support, like, for you guys to go and do these kind of things, you know. But yeah, it's a totally different world that these fucking kids live in compared to how we grew up.
No, it is. And then to see the government print money and just kick it out the door is something else too. And I really hope I sound like such a, I don't know, I sound dense almost when I say this, but I really do hope that this generation of our children are going to take the reins and do something with it. You know, like they are the future.
Well,
if I even remember the Whitney Houston song, like, well, but they need to take the reins though. They got to do it differently. We're like the middle ground where our grandparents were like the real boomers, and then our parents were their kids, and that's whenever like corporate and all this other shit started to really take over the country. But they were just trying to work and do their best and provide for their children, and I get sucked into another war or whatever. And then we're the offset of that, where, I mean, we're the preservative babies, you know, we're like the Happy Meal kids and all this stuff. And now almost like we were, we're like guinea pigs in a sense. And our children from us are like, you know, we've learned enough to hopefully teach them differently so they don't have to be guinea pigs. And hopefully they've learned too.
Well, and you see that thing where it's like, thanks, boomer parents, for being such shitty parents, you know, that we literally do the bare minimum and we're praised for our work that we do with our children. And, you know, and hopefully, like, I was actually telling my daughter, I was like, I can wait to be a grandparent. I can definitely wait. But when I become a grandparent, like, I want to be there to get my kids off the school bus, my grandkids off the school bus. I want to be there to cook good, like, oh, grandpa's, like, home cooking is, like, you know, is wholesome and it's filling and it's made with love, and that's the type I want to be. I don't want to have to be like where, you know, I've got to work until I'm 85 years old and I'm a nuisance to be here and I'm a burden. Like, I don't want that at all. I just want to be like a chill grandpa who cooks and barbecues and drinks beer and whiskey with the young kids every once in a while, you know, kind of thing.
Do you plan on staying in Washington long term?
Yeah, I think this is where I'm going to end up for now. You know, I had a buddy actually reach out to me. He was in the Navy, and he moved to San Antonio, and, you know, he's a part of the LGBT community, and, you know, my brother comes from the community and moved up here to Washington and just won't ever probably move back to Texas ever again, just because of how narrow-minded some folks are, or just society over there is, versus here where everything's just like, no one really cares. But I feel like people care enough in Texas where they'll say something like, oh, why are your nails painted black? Your toenails painted black. It's like, well, you know what I mean? Things like that. Like, ironic. Here, nobody cares at all what, you know, who's in your bedroom, what you're doing. It's, you know, and even on the conservative side of the state, it's funny, we were talking about last night, My brother's like, oh yeah, even the conservatives here, they're just so silly. They're just pretending to be conservatives compared to like Texas, where, you know, you have those very far right wing, you know, folks. So I think this is where I miss the beaches of Corpus. I miss the food, but you know, I don't think I can, especially the schools here. I mean, you can look at the teachers' wages here in Washington, one of the highest in the country, you know?
Yeah.
And so to me, I can see the difference in the quality of education my kids are getting. And no shade to my friends and family who are down in Texas teaching, but you know, they don't pay what teachers should get paid. You sure. know, like yeah. you said, they're the future, and we're gonna give them $40,000 a year fresh out of college to teach and deal with Title IV kids who are troublemakers and bad neighborhoods. Like, nah, that doesn't make sense to me. You know?
No. And then they're trying to do the same with the vouchers for private school. Instead of just trying to pay teachers more, they're like, let's do this. Let's spend money and try to get kids to go to these private schools, which for one, I'm thinking like there can't be that many private schools. You know, it's like, what are you going to do if a bunch of people take you up on your offer and you don't have the room for them, you know, but then you're going to abandon public schools? Like, that's where the majority of children can go. Like, God, dude, I'm telling you, I'm scraping, you know, I'm scraping to get out of Texas, man. And it'll happen at some point. At some point, I'm just going to say, fuck it. And we're going to roll. And this consequences be damned, you know, because,
you know, yeah,
I tell him, I'm like, dude, you are my sole reason for being here right now. My existence, all these things is because of you. It's like, yes, I have older sons, but they're grown. Like, they're essentially grown.
They can,
right?
They can fly out and visit and stuff.
Right. I could live in like the Bahamas right now or something, you know, but I'm like, you're my purpose. And so every decision I make, you know, is putting you first. And so I really talk him through this, and he's on the spectrum. So some things are hard for him to understand, where he's just like, yeah, daddy sounds great. Let's go through some shit. That's cool. Like, I don't know what you're talking about, fool. But I think he's about to be 9 and he's starting to really observe and get things a little bit more and stuff. And so, yeah, like just putting him in the best situation possible. I feel like there's no reason why you shouldn't want to do that for your children, you know, not making sacrifice. Like, you don't have to, you know, chop off your arms to walk. It's just, but you can make good decisions for your children. And instead of being, I'm just gonna say it, a lazy ass and accepting the poverty, accepting the low education standards, accepting that, oh man, I just things I see every day, I'm like, that's generations of tribalism. It's just a mentality, you know, to just exist and in this arena. And it's,
I see that a lot.
A city. It could be.
Yeah, I see it a lot in Texas. You know, my brother's from Miranda's Pass, and I have friends from Ingleside, Portland, you know, all the surrounding Refugio, Three Rivers.
Yeah.
And the one thing I noticed of them is like that small town mentality where like, this is where I'm born. I'm probably going to die here, and that's okay. And I'm like, when do you accept, like, there's, I guess that's why I have my kids travel. I guess I could say that's why they travel and they can see what else is out there.
See, like when you lived in New Jersey, you just saw a different side of the United States, a different mentality.
Oh yeah. Moving from New Jersey, right? East Coast, moving from New Jersey to Texas and having that Southern hospitality thing was like really weird at first. Everyone was very helpful. Everyone thought how I talked was funny and, you know, very polite about it. And then moving up to, yeah, literally. And then moving from Texas to Eastern Washington, you know, it was weird because you have this Seattle freeze, right? Where people are kind of, they're not like East Coast people. They're kind of rude, but helpful.
Yeah.
The people here are just rude and just ignore you or whatever. And so, growing up with that and that experience in the seventh grade, I think, because that's a canon event, right? When you move and you leave everything in your life to someplace new, being able to give, because my ex-wife never, she was born and raised in Corpus. But like having that, sharing that experience with my kids, because my kids moved to Washington in the sixth and seventh grade, sixth and seventh grade. So they had the same kind of time frame. So I knew in my head what I experienced and, you know, what could have helped. And so when they moved, you know, I got them into things and, you know, hey, let's go out and experience, let's go learn about, you know, we're in Seattle, let's go to Portland, let's go to Boise. Like, we're in the middle of all three of those places. let's go and experience that. And, you know, we have, and that's hopefully my children can take that. And if they want to move to Omaha, Nebraska, or Ames, Iowa, where this is corn, then that's, you know, hey, if that's the life for them, at least I can say I've experienced, like, I took them to New York. I took them to Miami. I've taken them to San Francisco and San Diego and LA and all that. So,
yeah. Well, and I think that the first time too, whenever someone travels outside of the United States and sees how other people live, is that this idea that we're the only people that are free in the world. It's just so false. And even countries where their government's set up differently, that's not what gives people freedom, you know, because like here in this country, our government, we probably have more laws and rules than almost any other country on the planet. And yet we're guaranteed rights and all these other things, right? Well, some of those people, they don't even have to put that on paper just to understand what human rights are. I think of like some of the countries like Finland and Norway, where they live in these socialists, you know, because they're taking care of their people. And I mean, that's just the basis of what that means. But and they're taxed higher, whatnot, and everything. But nobody's living in poverty. No one's living in shit. And they're getting like higher education standards and everything. When I got stationed in Germany, it blew my mind how people were just an entirely different mentality. Like violence didn't come first. It was more about being like sexy and like I mean, just they were very more like liberated with I don't know, just sex, I guess, attractiveness, things like that. And there wasn't just like violence on every channel. And we wonder why we have this violence in our country. But like the number one movies are always like people getting killed, blown up one way or the other, even like the Avengers. And I'll tell my son, well, they don't have blood, so it's not so bad. But I'm like, nah, these people are still dying. You know,
yeah,
like you think about like
still getting killed,
snapping a finger, like, millions of people just died. That's dark. That's dark. And that's like what we produce. While on the other hand, a lot of other countries are they're just dead opposite. And I think it shows in their people and their mentality. And I think that's something that has to change here. And again, it sounds so, you know, pussy for like Americans, right? Like, oh, this guy, he probably watches Disney movies. I'm like, I fucking do. As a matter of fact, you know, it's like it's
kind matter of fact, I do.
But you're right.
We need to have a mind shift of like what's really important to us. Like as Americans, what's really, really important? You know, I'd like to put the kids up there as, you know, the top three. But realistically, like we know we are a society that's been derived and developed through the military industrial complex, and war has been lucrative for the United States and probably always will be. So
for the majority of its history,
we've
probably been at war more years than we have not been at war.
Which kind of goes into the point where like, do I want my kids to join the military? I don't think they need to, but if they want to, I know that they'll be set up for success, you know, if given the right opportunities, right? Or at least if they're doing what they're supposed to do, you know, let's say they go and they learn a trade that they learn in the military. And, you know, like for me, for example, like, my background is in communication because I went to DINFOs and I had that experience, and I have a top secret clearance with SCI because I'm in the military, and it puts me ahead of everybody else, you know, right off the bat. Yeah, and you know, folks. So we'll see what happens with this next generation and what they do and how it changes the military.
Just getting them to walk across the street. I mean, I think that's like such a big deal, and not sit on the front porch. Like that's, you know, it's anecdotal, but I just think that's key, because I know for me, a lot of people who've had that experience, if they've gone and lived outside of the borders of the United States, even for a day, man, and just seen something else, your mentality really changes. And, you know, like whenever you take this trip in the near future, I mean, you'll just have to fly through some places, and just seeing some of that, you'll just go like, that's so cool. I mean, my time in Japan only was I lived in Korea, but like I had a TDY into Japan for like a week, and I'd happily live there now. Just after 1 week experience, I'm like, that country is kick ass. And I'm sorry that we bombed you, but at least we're friends.
Right, not
now.
Bad.
But yeah, I'd happily.
You're looking good now. You know,
it's very pretty. Yeah, it's like a lot of new buildings. That's cool.
But again, part of that, right? Why they just saw it, is just the culture of Japan,
right?
The Japanese culture and whatnot,
and not perfect at all. No, you know, no culture is, but they're very disciplined and they're prideful in the right instances. And what are your near term goals? I know you're you're still in A&M doing law school.
Yeah, I actually just got an A in my last quarter, so I'm shooting for. So I still got school. If I'm trying to finish up by the fall, like just graduate in December, but it's probably looking out. It'll be like spring of 2025, which is fine, not a big deal. But I'm trucking along, looking for a job that fits my schedule right now. But in the meantime, I've been taking orders. I can take orders with the Navy, which, you know, plug for the Navy Reserves. You know, if you want to have one foot in, one foot out, that's a great way to do it. But yeah, and then my friend's getting married in June, get the kids for the summer, doing the whole, you know, divorced dad thing of exchanging the children and flying them back and forth across the country. Which is so weird because we were talking about it. I just sent my kid on a plane to come visit me. So that, and then just getting through the summer, really, and just enjoying it. I'm trying to start up my own t-shirt screening company. And like, I actually want to do it myself and learn. And just a little side business, a little going back to, you got to have some different avenues and streams of revenue. And
sure, absolutely.
That, and, you know, just kind of, I think I'll be in Texas May for the Luke Combs concert, but yeah, long term.
You're gonna come all the way to Texas for Luke Combs concert?
Yeah, because that's my wife. My wife loves San Antonio. We have a buddy buried at Fort Sam, and so she likes to go visit him. And then, of course, like, you know, everybody's that we've got there. But it was a sold out concert. She somehow got tickets to that location, and so, you know, it'll be like a spring. It'll be like a little getaway / anniversary kind of deal for us. And
that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm not into country enough to, but it's like, I'm a big Chili Peppers fan. And whenever I was living in Houston, they played, and then literally the weekend of my birthday, but I didn't like, this is my dog's eating over here now. This is my like strange protectionism with Hunter, is that I've never gotten him a babysitter, like, ever. And I thought the one time then I was like, man, I should just get him a sitter. But then it was like a Thursday night, and I'm thinking like, well, what if I don't get home till real late? What if I get in a car accident? And I go into this paranoia where if anything can happen and I can't make it back to take care of my child, like, fuck. So I don't end up doing a lot of things because of that. So I still have never seen the Chili Peppers in concert. I
really? Saw that they were doing. Why don't you take him?
Dude, they have like a summer tour. They have I think two shows in Washington this summer. And so I kind of started eyeballing that. And I look at tickets though, and they're like $200 to like $800, $900. And I'm like, dude, who are you playing for now? That sucks, man. I went down this rabbit hole with Nirvana the other night because the 30th anniversary of In Utero just happened, like when they put that album out 30 fucking years, dude. And so I'm watching these interviews. And they had this uncut video circulating on YouTube when they did like an MTV interview where you only saw maybe like a minute of the clip or the whole like hour interview. But it's real cool because it's candid and they have a lot of awkward long pauses because they're just in the studio and like things are happening, whatever. But they started talking about concert tickets and what they were comfortable charging and people paying, because at the time, like, the most expensive show in the world was to see a Madonna for like $75-$80. And when they said that, Kurt Cobain's like, what? He's like, that's crazy. He's like, oh my God. He's like what do we charge? We don't charge them much. We don't charge over $20, right? And he's asking their manager. He's like, we're charging $18.75 right now. And he's like, well, that's probably money well spent. You know, but like, you could see Nirvana for $18 in the 90s, dude. You know, I saw Weezer, Gwen Stefani, what was their old band? Whatever, No Doubt. And and somebody else, all in one show, like in Nashville, like when I was stationed there in 97, I paid $14, bro. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not paying $250 or $300 to watch the Chili Peppers. And they're like in their 50s. And I love the band. I love the music. But it's just like, bro, that you're not going to give me enough out of that experience for me to drop $250, man.
Exactly. Well, Cheyenne, so I don't know if you know, Danny's actually named after the song Danny California.
Yeah,
like My Little Danny, and my wife got me tickets. We were dating right then for my birthday to see Red Chili Peppers. I think she paid like $90, you know, for the tickets.
I would pay $90. Yeah,
you know, $90, and that's like nosebleed. And I was fine. I get to say I saw them before I die, but My nephew, we're going to Seattle to take my nephew for his birthday. Everybody pitched in, got him tickets to Nicki Minaj, and it was like, hey, do you get two like nosebleed seats for $300 each, or do you just get one floor seat by yourself? And he's like, I want the $750 floor seat. So, and
for I'm Nicki like, Minaj?
For Nicki Minaj. And I'm like, bro, you don't even get a place to sit down. And they're like, I'm too old now. I got to have a place to sit down. I'm like, I'm not trying to stand up this whole time. But I'm just like, you know,
you got to be an incredible artist for me to drop that kind of money. Incredible.
I'm saying. And I'm
I
like,
saw Alicia Keys probably... and John Legend once, dude. And I don't think we paid over $100 a ticket.
What happened when I moved to Washington is, you know, in Texas, they have like, you know, the Randy Rogers band and Eli Young band and Casey Donahue, like those big Texas, mainstream Texas guys. You come up here and they're playing in small little like venues, like House of Rock venues for like $20. And I'm like, and I'm telling my wife, I'm like, babe, in Texas, like a show like this would be sold out in 10 minutes and they'd be $100 a ticket, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm just like the progression of how things are going. And I was like, and I get it, that's where they make the most money. But then at the same time, it's like,
yeah,
you're charging $120 for a fucking sweater. Like,
well, and something that I ended up, I think it was like a Dave Grohl interview when I was in this rabbit hole, is they talked about back then the ticket prices were cheaper because they would sell a lot of merch and they sold CDs, they sold records and cassettes. Mm-hmm. And now everything's digital and they have all these streaming deals. And the artists aren't making nearly as much money as they used to because of that. And that's why ticket prices have skyrocketed, apparently. And I learned this is like at the time, Nirvana's, when they would tour, they got, I think it was 25% of the proceeds from their tour. And that was split up three ways between the three of them. And so, and that was during that interview that came up or something. And they were like, and then the guy said, like, he's like, yeah, but, you know, it was like 25% of whatever show is like $10,000 a show or something like that. And then they're like, and then three ways. And Dave Grohl's like, shit, he's like, I can buy cigarettes now. So like they were so positive about that because it's still way more money than they had ever had. They're still going to get like $3,000-$4,000 per show. And if they played like 40 shows, that's, you know, that's pretty good. But still, you think about that, like all that other money going to who, you know,
everybody else.
I mean, just whatever else. And it's just kind of crazy. And so you think about like Taylor Swift selling like her tickets going for like $400,000-$500,000 a pop, and crazy. Every freaking stadium is sold out, and she's probably still only getting 20-25% of all of that, you know, which she's doing fine, but
she's doing okay.
She's all right. She dumped that dude, but whatever. Like, I don't know if you saw Travis Kelce singing Friends in Low Places at the Super Bowl. Parade. Oh dude, just look that up. It's just brutal. I look at that and I'm thinking, how is she with this guy? He's such a douche. He's such a douche. Yeah, I get it. He's probably like, he's a man's man and all this stuff, but God, he's a douche. And you just
think, I really like his brother. His brother.
Yeah, he's cool. Travis is
a douche. Travis Kelce is the little brother, right? And so
he's attention.
He's a very, very little brother-y of him.
Yeah. So. All right, man. We'll cut out here.
Yeah, no worries.
Good 90 plus minutes. And so unless there's anything else you want to talk about, or we can add on it another time. But
I think the only plug that I'd want in there is a plug for mental health, right? If you need help, go and get it. I think that's a big thing. I personally thought I was suffering from insomnia, so I went to the doctor, you know, getting help, like I always tell my younger sailors. And he's like, bro, no, it's not insomnia. I'm like, oh, good. He's like, it's a manic episode. And so got the help I needed, got the meds I needed, no longer on meds. Everything's good now, but because I took the time to get some help. So other than that, you know.
But you have to think about these things, and going back to fatherhood is like, what kind of parent are you being for your child? What kind of, person for them to look toward to if you're not taking care of yourself fully either? So it's good. It's good. You know, it's part of everything is just being mentally healthy.
Because I think I think part of it is just not being fully present, right? Because you're still putting that stuff in the back of your head, but it's still there. And I'm just about being present. I need to be better about it, you know, being off the phone, spending more time with the girls, especially being home with them now. Like, you know, I'm understanding my 2-year-old a little bit more because, you know, I'm around her more. And yeah, just one of those things. But that's all I really had to plug in there for, is just, you know, take care of yourself, because you can't, it's like they say with the whole airline, you know, put your mask on so you can breathe before you can put anybody else's on, you know?
Sure. That's a good one. That's a really good one. Mm-hmm. Put that on a shirt.
Right.
All right, brother. Well, it's been good talking to you again. And if this one, if for whatever reason this one doesn't work, dude, I'm probably just not going to tell you.
No, we would just do a whole other episode. That's like, fine.
It's good developmental conversation.
Well, let's shoot to plan for another one, I guess, when I get back from Japan. So in May time.
Yeah, for sure. You can talk about all the things that you've did and learned, and that would be really good for sure.
Yeah, we can do that. All right, brother. Well, I'll talk to you later.
All right, Vic. Thanks for joining me on the Opening Tribe podcast.